I'm going to call the Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology for Tuesday, April 24, 2007, to order. And we're going to start with a public hearing on House Bill 2834. Representative Jensen.
Thank you. Gillian said he really appreciated working with his daughter.
Thank you for gracing our committee with your presence, and we're happy to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for allowing me to come here and explain a little bit what was the intention behind House Bill 2834. For the record, I am Bob Jensen, State Representative from House District 58. Ever since I've been in the legislature, I've heard people wondering and complaining and musing over unfilled positions, vacant positions in agencies. 2 years ago, we, the legislature, attempted to make a step toward understanding that a little more by directing that agencies had to report to DAS their vacancies, unfilled positions that they had. That seems not to have gotten to where we kind of wanted to go with it. It is, as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, as some of you are, it is a complicated process when we start looking at some of the agency budgets and trying to figure out who's on second, I guess, with that. And when we've got these vacancies that remain unfilled for time immemorial, it even makes it a little more complicated than that for us. So the intention of 2834 is to require that if a position has remained vacant for 6 months, that the director of the agency or someone whom they may designate, I don't know that it's stated exactly that way in the bill, but that someone from the agency at any rate submit a justification or rationale for this position remaining vacant. In the event that they either cannot or do not do that, then the intent of the bill is that the position goes away. Now, I've talked about this with the co-chairs of the Ways and Means and with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and they were supportive of the idea of the concept. They saw no problem with it. I've talked to a couple of the agencies, and they're not always going to like to give up their vacancies, but in talking with the director from DAS, I think he was understanding of what we wanted and were trying to do. So with that, that's very short, and I know you've got other things on your agenda, but I will try to answer any questions that you might have for me.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Thatcher.
Oh, no. I was looking at my finger to get the paper.
Oh, sorry. It's like an auction. You raise your hand.
And you're
buying. Well, actually, it's not a question as much as it is a comment. I think this is a pretty simple bill, but it really, I see a need for this, and I think it's a good bill. So. Representative Byers.
Thank you. And I don't have any problem with the bill. I think it's probably a good idea. Excuse me. But is there... I mean, a lot of times they'll have trouble filling a position, whether it's, you know, the salary's not good enough. I mean, is there any way to take a look at these or to ask staff to come back and say, you know, this is an important position, but we can't fill it under this instance? Or?
Chairman Riley and Representative Byer. Thank you very much for that question. Yes, that was anticipated, and that was the reason for requesting that the director explain why the position has remained vacant. With satisfactory or a good explanation of why it's remained vacant, and life goes on. And you certainly point to some of the things, and we've certainly heard about them in our subcommittee on ways and means where there aren't that many of these people. And where the private sector is paying a lot more money, we were talking with the revenue office, and some of the personnel that they need, and they have a hard time filling those positions. Clearly, if there are three people in the world who are qualified for this job, and there are four openings, and the three are, and one of those is us, and the other three have these people already employed, we're not going to find somebody real quick to fill that position. So that would be totally unfair, and the example is ludicrous, and I apologize for that. But there are many very real examples where we're looking for highly qualified people, and the highly qualified people simply aren't there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much, Chairman Riley, and members of the committee. My thanks to you for allowing me to be here, and thanks to you for hearing this bill.
I'm going to call Linda Ames. Would you like to give us the department's take on this bill?
Sure. Chair Riley, members of the committee, I'm Linda Ames with the Budget and Management Division at Department of Administrative Services. I'm here to provide information on this bill. In particular, I just want to describe to you what we already do in regards to long-term vacancies. Under current practices, the Department of Administrative Services and the Legislative Fiscal Office monitor agencies' long-term vacancies on a quarterly basis. In particular, reporting of long-term vacancies by agencies is required under statute under 291-263. So each quarter, the Department of Administrative Services compiles a list of all the vacancies that have been vacant more than 6 months. So, and we split it 7 to 12 and greater than 12. And there's some technical stuff. We get stuff out of the personnel system. We also then match that up with the what we call the PIC system, the position budgeting system, so that we can marry up vacancy information with budget information. So after that's all done, then we make a spreadsheet that's specific to each agency, send it out to them. This is, this is your list of as of a like our last report, it was from December 31st. And then what they do is explain why each position has been vacant. There's a number of legitimate reasons why we get long-term vacancies. You've already talked about one, recruitment issues. Some other typical reasons is we have a number of seasonal positions in agencies. The legislative branch actually is one example of that, where part of the year you will have vacant positions because you only fill them for session. Other reasons are since that date, that December 31st run, maybe the position's actually been filled or they're in the process of recruitment. And the other kind of general reason is that position is being held vacant by the agency because of unanticipated costs somewhere else in their budget. And they're using the savings from the vacancy in order to pay, for instance, unanticipated AG or hearings costs for this year. So then the agency send that information back to us. We compile it into more of a summary format and then provide that report to the Legislative Fiscal Office. And then in terms of how we use the information, both the analysts in budget management and in legislative fiscal use that as a tool as they analyze budgets. Us, when we put together the governor's budget, and then, of course, legislative fiscal as they're coming to the final legislatively adopted budget. And we really do two different things with the information. First, agencies' budget levels are adjusted depending on the vacancies that we anticipate will happen during the coming biennium. So we take dollars out. And the second is, where we find that long-term vacancies exist that really should be removed out of the budget because it's an ongoing issue, we remove them at that point. That concludes my testimony, but I'd be happy to answer questions.
Ms. Ames, could you give me an approximate percentage of these positions that are there as holding places? The way you stated it was they're open so they can use the money somewhere else.
Right. Well, let me go. If I actually look at the report from December, we categorize these things into 11 different categories. So if you eliminate the, it's already been filled, it's been abolished, it's seasonal, it's recruitment. I mean, if you eliminate those kind of reasons that are, we've probably got 3, 4, maybe a quarter of the long-term vacancies are being held for budget-related issues.
Okay. Can we have a copy of that latest report?
Sure. I don't have a bunch of them with me, but I'd be glad. I'll send it over today.
You can give one to her, and she can make copies.
Okay. And the sorts of things, I mean, if I think back to the typical reasons that comes up, there's a number of situations where that sort of thing will come up. For instance, Department of Human Services has a lot of positions that are directly tied to their caseload levels. So, and of course, they do a rebalance periodically, so their positions sort of get adjusted as we go along. But if caseload is coming in significantly lower than they were budgeted for, then they will hold positions vacant because they don't need that caseload. But the other kinds of things are sometimes not so much right now, but say in 01, 03, and 03, 05, where programs were cut very significantly in a number of budgets. There were unspecified reductions to budgets in some cases where the legislature said, I don't, you know, you manage it, but I want you to cut your budget $3 million. And sometimes agencies will hold vacancies in order to do those kind of cuts. Other kinds of things are, in past biennia, the contract costs have not been fully funded. This biennium they were, but in the last 4 years they weren't. So agencies are obligated to pay the new COLAs, et cetera, based on the current contracts, but they maybe were only given half the funding in order to support those. So in those cases, it is typical that agencies will hold vacancies to absorb some of those costs.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beyer.
Thank you. I guess after listening to the testimony, it would appear that you're pretty much already doing what this bill asks you to do. And so I kind of wonder, because I've sat in the Ways and Means budgets too, and for some reason there's a little bit of a disconnect on that information. And so I'm wondering if this bill goes at this the right way, or if there's a better way to have that information in the budgeting process. Or
Mr. Chair, Representative, and I agree that I don't think a lot of people really use the information that is already available, and don't understand that it's already there in some cases. One really good resource is Legislative Fiscal Office, because there are a lot of questions relating to positions and how they're filled and how they're counted and issues around them. Did a really nice little informational paper in July of 04 that one of the topics is vacancies and why are there vacancies and how many are there, but then they address a number of other issues around positions. And it may be that if we just got some of that information out to people, there would be a generally better understanding of the issues.
I guess what I see is the only problem is we don't have a definition of valid reason. And that seems to be extremely discretionary with the director. And I can understand why that maybe we don't have a more precise definition of valid reason, but it appears to me that many positions are being held open for what is, in my opinion, deceptive. They are to hide the fact that they're using the money somewhere else, mm-hmm. and I think that's a problem for this body. I guess that's all I really wanted to say about that. Did you have a response to that comment?
Mr. Chair, it does highlight, in my mind, the only way, as you analyze a budget, to really understand if it's valid or not, because there are some fairly gray areas, is when you're analyzing the whole budget. And that probably isn't feasible to do every quarter. And so realistically, I think it tends to happen when, from our side, we do budget development before the governor's budget, where we're really looking at things more holistically, not just the positions. And I believe the Legislative Fiscal Office would say the same thing. Because some of what is going on is really management issues in where money is really being spent. You have to look at the whole thing in order to make judgments about, is this a legitimate use of a vacant position, or are you really doing something you shouldn't be doing?
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Is there anybody in the audience who would like to speak to House Bill 2834?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Grover Simmons. I represent the Independent Employer Association and also the Pacific Printing and Imaging Association. For 23 years. We'd like to respectfully oppose this bill if it affects the role of the state printer in Oregon. There has been a state printer in Oregon actually before there was a constitution. When Oregon was a territory, in practice, there was a state printer. And so when the first constitution was drafted and put into place, there was in it the role of a state printer, and we've had one ever since, and the Constitution remains unchanged to this day. On the other hand, the role of the state printer has undergone quite an evolution in recent years, particularly under the Department of Administrative Services. The role of the state printer has been de-emphasized and made less significant dramatically in recent years. The last state printer by name, as far as I know, was Mike Fries. And in the latter part of his employment, he was a state printer in name only. He was doing computer work for DAS and so forth, but there was really no active state printer at that point. And now, to my knowledge, there is no state printer, even in name only. Now, the industry, obviously, would like there to be a strong state printer in compliance with the state constitution. There are many issues that the industry is interested in, and we believe could be well handled if there were a state printer with some significant authority. For example, the reprinting or republishing of the Oregon Revised Statute is a current issue. The Legislative Council is required to republish that after each general session. And 2 years ago, that pit, over a $400,000 job, was put out to bid, and we lost it. Oregon lost it fair and square to Missouri. So that job went to Missouri, to Van Hoffman Printing, a huge printing company back there. So when I started looking into it this time around, I found out that the Legislative Council's office, not the council per se, because Ann was just coming into her position, but somebody in her staff, on her staff, rolled that contract over automatically without putting it out to bid in Oregon. And our nose has been out of joint ever since as an industry. So anyway, we're working with her on that subject, and I met with her yesterday, and I think it's resolved in the future. Not that we're going to get a bill passed this time, but I think we've resolved the issue in the future. But we believe that if there were a truly a public printer with some authority, the issues of that sort could be addressed appropriately. So you mentioned the word deceptive, and it's a problem for the body. I'm not sure that there's that kind of an issue involved in this at all. I don't know that they're, or even think that they're playing hanky-panky with the funds. I just think that they don't want a public printer, and the industry certainly would like one. So I'd ask you to either amend the bill or hold it in committee. If you amend it to address the role of the state printer, we'd be happy, and thank you very much for your time.
So, Mr. Simmons, do you believe that this bill would do away with the position of state printer because it's been unfilled for some period of time? Is that right?
That's a risk, Mr. Chairman. Representative Jensen just indicated that if the position is vacant for 6 months, the intent is to eliminate it. Well, this has been vacant for well over 6 months, and so I don't know what kind of a risk is involved, but any risk at all, I think, would contravene the state constitution.
Yeah, so in that case, I don't think we have to worry about it. I think
okay. Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Great. Thank you. Any other person who would like to testify on this bill? Not. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2834, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2834.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2834 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Girard.
This has a subsequent Ways and Means.
With a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Girard moves the House Bill 2834 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll probably go ahead and support this and send it to Ways and Means so they can discuss it. I have concerns that this might actually make them report less often if they're already doing it quarterly and this bill says to do it every 6 months. I do have a few concerns about that.
Okay. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Yes.
Aye. House Bill 2834, having received your required vote, is passed on to the floor of the House with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you.
Happens to me too.
I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2834. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2864. You want to tell us about this one?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. House Bill 2864, we heard 2 weeks ago today, that's the measure that revises provisions related to cemetery authorities. We took testimony at that time, and there was discussion brought up of amendments that needed to be made to the measure. Those amendments were submitted by the Department of Consumer Business Services. They are enclosed in the Dash 2 amendment, which you find below the staff measure summary. Those amendments enhance the language prohibiting the unauthorized conversion of trust funds into insurance policies and also clarify the term master trustee. I believe that is a summary of what those amendments do. We have DCBS here to speak to the amendments if somebody has questions, and also representatives of the Cemetery Association, the Mortuary and Cemetery Board.
I'm going to hear from the department and the commission if they have something they want to say. I'm open to have you come up and fill us in.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is David Tapman, and I spoke to you 2 weeks ago. I'm the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. At that time, I came in and testified regarding this bill and identified three issues that we had a concern about, and subsequently indicated we wanted to work with proponents of the bill, as well as Mr. Coe from the Mortuary Board, to address some of those concerns. The Dash 2 amendments do just that. They clarify a couple of places that we had spoken about. And although if you look at the Dash 2s, they're somewhat hard to they're cryptic to read, they do exactly what we asked that they do. They clarify the distinction between a certified provider and a master trustee. Secondly, they clarify what should be refunded should a trust be canceled by the consumer. And lastly, we had concerns about provisions regarding conversions from trusted money to an insurance product, and we've asked that that be withdrawn, and that's been withdrawn by the amendments. So in talking with the industry, particularly Mr. Cochran, we all seem to be in agreement this is the right way to go.
Questions? Thank you very much. What's the will of the committee?
Are you in work session?
We are.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments.
Representative Gerard moves Dash 2 amendments be adopted for House Bill 2864. Discussion.
Do we know where the association that was tasked at DCBS is fine with it? Is there a head nod or something?
Okay. Yeah, I asked. I told them we could come up if they had a problem.
Oh, I missed that. Okay, thank you.
Well, okay. And
yes.
And the
Cemetery Board?
Cemetery Association is okay?
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay. And DCBS. So this is a
kumbaya. Everybody's okay. This is a kumbaya.
Kumbaya bill.
And the finance industry is here in the room.
The kumbaya bill. I like those.
Any other discussion? Any objection?
No.
Dash 2 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Gerard. I move House Bill 2864 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 2864 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Does this have a fiscal impact at all?
I can answer that, Mr. Chair. Representative Thatcher, I believe on the original measure we had heard that the measure would have a minimal fiscal impact, and that these amendments were not expected to change that. But because of the crush of requests going into fiscal and revenue, and because of the fact that we got the Dash 2s yesterday and the Dash 1s on Monday, we have not had a chance to review that, but they don't anticipate that changing with the amendments.
All right, thank you.
Further questions? Call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. And I'm going to assign Representative Gilman, whose bill this is, to carry this bill. So having the required votes, this bill is passed. and I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2864. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2950. Do you want to tell us about that one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 2950 requires that elected port commissioners complete a public management training course before they take the oath of office.
Thank you. Ken Armstrong? Want to tell us about this bill, please?
I would be happy to. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Armstrong representing the Oregon Ports Group. Oregon Ports Group is comprised of Oregon's 23 public port districts, ranging from Brookings Harbor down the south coast to Port of Umatilla on the upper Columbia River. This bill is before you as just part of an effort of the ports industry to increase its professionalism, its accountability. This was an issue that was brought up during the interim part of the, some of you may remember from the last session's budget process. There was a budget note to take a look at the Economic and Community Development Department and the various issues that go into economic development around the state, and ports playing such a critical element in that whole process. Some of the discussions were what can we do to help ports do a better job at its economic development charge, and this was one of the suggestions that came up, and we decided to move forward with it, quite frankly. What it requires is, as you can see in the bill, that the training sessions be provided for a day for these commissioners who are elected. And by the way, I should say that there are two ports that this does not apply to, and that would be the ports of Coos Bay and the Port of Portland. Those two ports have gubernatorially appointed commissions. The remainder have locally elected commissions, and it would require them to undertake this course that would be typically offered by the Special Districts Association. And Amanda Rich from Special Districts Association has agreed to join me up here. There is training that SGAO does provide to commissions of all of its districts, and this is the one that would be in statute to focus on things like public budgeting, open meeting laws, public records, that sort of thing, to make sure that port commissioners understand the issues that they're dealing with and how to be an effective port commissioner. So with that, I will be happy to answer any questions that you might have. We encourage you to pass the bill.
Did you have anything to add to this before we take questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Amanda Rich, and I represent the Special Districts Association of Oregon. And we're just here to reiterate our support for the bill and to let you know that we do indeed provide training to all of our elected officials. We encourage training. We make it available at our conferences annually and then also regionally and around the state throughout the year, and again try to encourage all of our elected officials, district board members, to participate, and this we would be able to provide this training at really no additional cost to the board members. So
questions? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not opposed necessarily in philosophy. I'm just wondering, could you describe the problem? Is there a problem really that this is fixing? Or you said it came up in the interim.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, I wouldn't say that there's a particular problem. I think it's just a matter of the industry wanting to make sure that port commissioners have the ability and are expected to reach a certain level of expertise and knowledge prior to taking their oaths of office. So I wouldn't say it'd be anything more specific than that, other than the ports industry feeling like, you know, we really need to make sure that we have maximum professionalism on the part of our commissions, but it's not driven by a particular bad apple, so to speak, or anything like that. It's just a general wanting to raise the bar, I guess.
If I may, Chair Riley, Representative Edwards, actually this is a concept that we would support, the special districts would support for all of our board members. I'm not sure that it's necessary to do it statutorily, but in general, we think it is important and necessary for all board members of any type of district.
Representative Byer?
Sorry. Of all the other special districts, do you have a pretty wide participation? How close do you think to full participation in this training you are?
Chair Riley, Representative Byer, I don't know. I'm trying to think back and if I've ever heard any statistics on percentage of participation in terms of training. And I don't have an exact number. I know that we do have decent participation at our conferences. We offer for first-time attendees. We offer scholarships so that they can come for free, particularly newly elected folks. So we do everything we can to encourage them. I know that also on an individual level that many of the boards impose upon themselves a requirement for training, and they kind of take that on themselves. But I can't. I can. If you'd like me to follow up with that, I can try to get you some numbers on percentage of participation in training.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Kind of following up on Representative Edwards is saying, I'm not opposing the bill, but I'm hearing it doesn't really address a specific problem, and you're already training people. It sounds like. Is there just a danger that maybe in the future that training wouldn't continue if perhaps a different person was in charge of the special districts? Is that the concern, maybe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, I guess, you know, the folks that that run, there have been circumstances, and I can't quote a specific commissioner offhand, but there have been circumstances where, you know, due to a group of folks who don't like what a particular port manager is doing, for example, may decide that they, as a block, may want to run to change direction of the port on a specific narrow sort of an issue. That has happened in the past. And we want to make sure that people who are elected port commissioners are taking the standpoint of what's in the broadest and best public interest, not just on a narrow slate of issues or issue, and if they choose to do it that way, that they are also aware of what their other obligations and expectations are. So it's preemptive in a way, and just hoping that we can get the best and the brightest of those who are interested in running.
Chair Riley, Representative Thatcher, I would just add on to what Ken has said, that a board can get themselves in pretty big trouble if they don't understand their fiduciary responsibilities. And I think that is, in large part, what we're looking at with this sort of training.
I had one question. Will this training be available, though not required, for Coos in Portland?
Mr. Chair, it would be certainly available to them. Port of Portland is not a member of Special Districts Association because they don't qualify under the same definitions. So I suppose it's the sort of thing that they could do. Coos Bay, they are members of Special Districts Association and would and probably do in many instances already participate, and that would be my guess.
Chair Riley, to my knowledge, non-members are welcome to come to our trainings. It's just a matter of making sure that they know about it. And we also work with the League of Cities and with the counties and trying to do joint trainings and get the word out about trainings. So they certainly would be welcome.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 29? Where are we? 2950.
2950. I'm assuming one more.
Good afternoon. Chairman and committee members. My name is Dave Harlan. I'm the Ports and Program Policy Manager for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. And we're in support of this bill. I work directly with port managers around the state. They're in support of the bill as well as some of the previous folks who testified. This is about raising the bar. We are working on an initiative with ports. We're working to put in place a requirement that they have strategic plans and that they follow best practices on their governances. And this bill is a part of that larger picture. We do have instances where commissioners act outside of their governances, either through, you know, not knowing what their roles and responsibilities are, or because they're pursuing an agenda of their own. And I can tell you that last Friday, at an unnamed port, a commissioner came in and ordered staff to put a legal advertisement in the paper for a meeting tonight. None of the other commissioners were aware of that. And this is it's those sorts of little nagging problems that we're trying to get a handle on.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2950, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2950.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2950 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Girard moves House Bill 2950 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments, questions? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ryan? Aye.
Aye.
Representative Rogers? Aye. Representative Sutter? Aye. Aye. Having gotten the required votes, House Bill 2950 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I'm going to ask Representative Boone to carry this. And with that, that's the end of our work today. So I'm going to close this meeting of the House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology. Thank you.